The U.S. blacklists more Chinese tech companies. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. The U.S. government has added four more Chinese companies plus a think tank to its so-called entities list, basically blacklisting them from being able to buy parts from the U.S. This is the same list the Chinese telecom firm Huawei was added to last month. These newly added entities are all related to supercomputing. BBC Asia business correspondent Karishma Vaswani joins us. Good morning.
Good morning.
So why supercomputing companies? Do we have any clarity on why these companies were added to this blacklist?
One of the industries that China is really leaping ahead in is supercomputing. And that's what the United States has, to some extent, targeted as a result of this new entity list addition. So many analysts that I've spoken to have said this is a very strategic move by the United States because, in effect, it's trying to cripple one of the most important industries that Beijing has placed a real priority on, not just economically, but for its political future as well.
U.S. firms like Intel and NVIDIA supply these supercomputing companies with their chips. How much will this hurt those U.S. firms?
Yeah, we've already heard that it is going to hurt U.S. firms. You know, even after the Huawei ban, there was a great deal of concern from U.S. industry lobbyists who said that this would inevitably have an impact on American technology as well. What it would do is isolate China and force it to develop its own technology, which would then create the sort of parallel alternative universe, if you will, where China has technology that perhaps, you know, is still going to be a few years behind, but it certainly does pose the risk that whatever China develops will then not be able to be integrated with American technology, raising more security risks in the future.
BBC Asia business correspondent Karishma Vaswani, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Let's take a look at the numbers. The FTSE in London is up less than 0.1%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up in the 2-4% range, with the Dow future up 61 points. U.S. oil prices are up. U.S. oil trading in New York is up 0.5%, with the White House expected to unveil new sanctions against Iran later today. This month's Pride celebrations mark the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Riots, a catalyst for the modern LGBTQ rights movement. In the past decade, foundation funding for LGBTQ causes has increased nearly 60%. Despite that, transgender-focused organizations are still struggling to find enough funding. Some philanthropic initiatives are trying to direct money to smaller grassroots trans groups. Lyle Goldstein reports.
You know that jar of spare change you have lying around your house, ready to help you out with a trip to the laundromat? Well, for Kim Watson, the coin jar sitting on her desk at a health center in the Bronx is actually part of how she keeps her nonprofit running.
This is my cup of donations right here. These are the big bunch of receipts in here that I spend for MetroCards and everything.
Watson is the vice president of CK Life, a health services nonprofit for transgender people. She runs support groups, trains medical providers, and raises money for surgeries. She says the nonprofit is underfunded, running on about $25,000 a year. And some of the money comes out of her own pocket.
There's no reimbursements. Nobody's giving me anything. This is my money that I'm personally putting back into CK Life.
She has applied for grants, but she's gotten a lot of no's. As a small nonprofit without a fiscal sponsor, CK Life isn't always eligible, and it takes time and expertise to write a successful application. Alexander Lee of Funders for LGBTQ Issues says there's an overall lack of funding for transgender groups. He says, based on the latest data, there are only 5 trans-focused and trans-led nonprofits in the U.S. with budgets over $1 million. And some foundations only fund groups of that size or even bigger.
So unfortunately, we're in this kind of chicken and egg problem where the organizations are so small because of lack of funding, they're not able to access more funding from formal sources, from foundations.
To tackle that problem, these intermediary funding groups have formed to bridge the gap. They collect money the traditional way, from foundations and wealthy donors, and then they give it to the smaller groups focused on trans issues. Gabriel Foster is the executive director of one of these organizations, the Trans Justice Funding Project.
We really wanted to focus on the very, very, very grassroots groups and organizations, the ones that probably would never even get their applications across the desks of major foundations.
To do this, the project only funds groups with budgets of less than $250,000. The application's also only a few pages long, no experienced grant writer required.
We can't wait to be invited to the table anymore, and we had to build our own damn table, and we did it, and we moved over $1 million into trans communities.
And it's not only about getting more money to these groups. An all-trans and non-binary panel selects the grantees. Foster says he's hopeful that letting trans people make these funding decisions could help shift some of the power dynamics in philanthropy. I'm Lila Goldstein for Marketplace.
Part of being a responsible news organization, especially one that covers business and the economy, is fiscal responsibility. Marketplace's budget year ends on June 30th, and we're closing in on our goal of 2,500 donors for this drive. But we still need to hear from you. Become a Marketplace investor for as little as $5 and keep trustworthy, independent news going strong. Contribute today at marketplace.org, and thank you.
The Women's World Cup continues today. The defending champions, the U.S., face off against Spain, and Sweden takes on Canada. It is a big moment in sports, but also in fashion. UK-based global fashion website lovethesales.com reports that searches for soccer-inspired women's clothing items have quadrupled in the last month, with the Women's World Cup jerseys from Nigeria and France in particularly high demand. Marketplace's Mariel Segarra reports.
The Nigerian team jerseys, designed by Nike, are sort of retro-looking, lime green, black, and white with a zigzag pattern. Same design as the men's 2018 World Cup jerseys, which sold out in minutes on Nike's website. Yeah, soccer jerseys are in. And Sean Green Carter at the Fashion Institute of Technology says they're part of a much bigger trend.
Athleisure is the fastest-growing area of the fashion industry, particularly in the United States. So people want comfort. And they also want to be able to express themselves.
And their loyalty to a national team or a club. Also, Edward Romaine at Bleacher Report says a lot of this has to do with who's on the covers of fashion magazines.
It has shifted largely from being just Hollywood actors and musicians into being really sort of a global, athletically driven portfolio.
Soccer-inspired pieces like scarves and jerseys have even reached the runway. You'll see them in the collections of designers like Balenciaga and Versace. I'm Mariel Segarra for Marketplace.
And in New York, I'm Sabri Benishor with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.